Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi Specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Next generation on your favorite station. We start the series, but when we are gone, it'll feel beyond. We start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We start the series.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Comic Corner Star Trek Edition for May of 2019, presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. It's Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're listening to my voice, that means we're live, and that means you can call 646-668-2433, share your thoughts on any of these great comics that we're about to discuss, or just call up and chat and say hi. Tell us how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Or call and tell us we suck. Whatever's on your mind, give us a call. The number here is 646-668-2433, and we will be here live for about an hour and a half or so. So please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Tonight we're going to be talking about Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 1. Step aboard the Enterprise with Kirk, Spock, Bones, Uhura, Sulu, Scotty, and Chekov as they begin the end of their original five-year mission. We're also going to talk about Star Trek Waypoint Special Number 2019. I don't think it has a number. It's just a special. In the anthology series celebrating 50 years of Star Trek. We're going to be talking about that one as well. And our final book will be Star Trek The Q Conflict Number 3, as the clash of the godlike beings continues, the captains face off in a series of war games that become much more lethal when Q introduces a fifth competitor. So we're going to talk about these three books in great length and detail, and we would love to hear your thoughts. The number here is 646-668-2433. We are currently live on Blog Talk Radio. You may notice that there's going to be a little bit different in this show because we're not going to be stopping for breaks every 25 minutes because this particular show, as with Stunt Treks, is not being broadcast over on Odyssey Radio, iHeartRadio, and Sirius XM. It's strictly only a podcast. So we're not going to be stopping, and we're going to be going as long as we need to talk about what we have to, and we'd love to make you part of that. So give us a call at 646-668-2433. And without further ado, I would like to introduce my Trek experts with me. We'll start off with Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Ready to talk about these three books.
It's going to be good. A lot of good stuff to talk about. I'm looking forward to it. We also have with us Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing great. You almost have to ask yourself, are we in the golden age of Star Trek comics? I don't know. We might be.
I think it's possible. We'll leave that question for TJ from Freakopolis Geekery. How you doing tonight, TJ?
I am doing very good, and I have to say, I think we might just be. I think we probably are. We have an awesome lineup tonight. I loved all these books. They're all very different and are, you know, sort of show off the different strengths that IDW has with the Star Trek license under their wing. So, very excited to talk about these and doing pretty good.
And there is a new Discovery book, a three-issue Discovery book coming out that follows up Such Sweet Sorrow that deals with Spock and Burnham's relationship. I'm not sure what the release date is for that, but I remember seeing it floating around on the internet somewhere. And
It's later this summer, I believe.
And Star Trek Year 5 is an ongoing monthly book, so we'll be talking about this every month. This is not a short-run series, correct?
It is, finally. When we started the show, we had Boldly Go, which followed the Kelvin Universe crew, and that was an ongoing, and it went, I think, 18 issues, just, you know, sort of medium length for an ongoing, but since then we've just had one shot annuals, waypoints, and lots of really great miniseries, but we haven't really had an ongoing. But year five is finally here. It's in our hands. It's in your local comic book stores now, and this promises to be an ongoing with no end in sight. So, yeah, so it's very exciting. We'll have this pretty much every month until, you know, hopefully for at least the next couple of years.
And I have a special offer for you guys listening to Comic Corner right now. I'm holding in my hand, my sweaty, greedy little hand, I'm holding a copy of Star Trek Year 5, issue number 1, right here in my hand. Now, normally, don't start calling yet. I know you want to, but don't. Normally, I would give this away to the first caller. However, a lot of people have been messaging me and saying that they don't listen to the show live because they have to work, or it's a different time zone, or they're in Australia or the UK. So this time, it's going to be a little bit different. If you would like to win this comic book that I'm holding in my hand right now, what I want you to do is I want you to go to our Facebook page, Trek Talkin' and Beyond on Facebook, and send us a message and say, I would like to win the Star Trek comic book. It's that simple. Send us a message. Very easy. This way, whether you're listening to us on Thursday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, whenever, you'll be able to still enter and win this comic book, okay? And then what we're going to do is we're going to collect all the names of everyone that sent us a message, and on our next Comic Corner, we will pick a winner, and that lucky winner will win this comic book. It's that simple. So just go to Trek Talk and Beyond on Facebook, send us a message saying you'd like to win this comic book, or put your name in, and you'll be all set. You'll be entered to win. And then on our next Comic Book Corner, we'll announce the winner. So how does that sound, guys? What do you think? Does that sound pretty good?
Sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
I think it sounds really good. I'm trying to get a few more issues. I actually went over to the store on Comic Book Day to pick up like 5 issues so we could do this as an ongoing thing. But you're never going to believe what happened. I got over to Freakopolis Geekery, and they sold out. They sold all of them. I was shocked.
No.
There was a whole, yes. There was a whole stack of them on the shelf, on the counter. And I went over there, and I couldn't find them. I said, TJ, where's all the Star Trek books? I want to pick up like 5 of them so we can give them away to our listeners. And someone came in the store and bought them all. So hopefully TJ can track me down 5 more issues, and then we can do this for you guys as on the next Comic Corner. So stay tuned. But right now, make sure you go to our Facebook page and shoot us a message. Tell us you want to enter the comic book, and we'll be all set. We'll announce the winner on the next show. So without further ado, TJ, why don't you jump right in and tell us about our first book?
Sure. I do want to say we definitely got something coming for you. But yeah, for our first book, I thought we'd step into something familiar, something we've been following for a couple months now, and that is, of course, the Q Conflict. It's currently our only miniseries that has been, you know, 3 issues in now, so we've been spending some time with it for a couple months and are beginning to see, you know, sort of get the lay of the land inside this 5-issue miniseries. That is, of course, written by Scott and David Tipton, the Tipton brothers, pretty familiar faces for any IDW Star Trek readers. The pencils by David Messina and inks by Elisabetta D'Amico. The Q Conflict revolves around an interdimensional conflict between some of Star Trek canon's most powerful beings, Trelane, Q, Aelborn, and Metron. They were having this sort of war in a separate dimension, but it began leaking over and causing destructive outcomes inside of our dimension, or the you know, Starfleet, Star Trek dimension. As such, some of the greatest captains throughout history, very familiar to us, sort of got in contact with these powerful beings and managed to sort of, with the sort of idea of Q, I suppose, they're fighting the war through sort of this these number of games for these super powerful beings. So we have Trelane with Captain James T. Kirk, Q with, of course, Captain Jean-Luc Picard. That totally makes sense. You know, they have a long standing relationship. Aelborn with Captain Benjamin Sisko, and Metron with Captain Catherine Janeway. And then even further than that, all the crews of the, you know, sort of title ships were split up in sort of dodgeball team, gym class team, drafted into these four different crews. So they're all mixed up a little bit. Like Captain Jean-Luc Picard has Spock as his first officer. Captain Benjamin Sisko has Sulu as his yeoman. And yeah, so they've sort of been all mixed up, and it's giving us some really interesting sort of interactions between some crew members that we may have never seen before. Being in that we're in number three, Captain Janeway took the first challenge, the first contest, and recovered the Iconian gateway device. And we sort of open up into number three with a bit of an intermission. The coaches spend some time talking to their crews and captains and explaining, you know, what they may, you know, basically saying, hey, we're relying on you to win this thing. I agreed to Q's game, but I still really want you to win. And throughout that, you know, this first sort of act of the book, we get the sense that Q has been sort of orchestrating this whole thing, right? Like, he's been, it was his idea. He picked the first challenge. He is, you know, clearly has quite a large, heavy hand in the proceedings of this interdimensional war, which, you know, sort of bugs some of the other more powerful beings and captain, well, more leaders of these teams. Q gets a sense of that and hands off things to Trelane for the second contest, who originally wants to do a sort of four-way duel amongst the different starships, which I would imagine would be quite unbalanced given the time difference between all the different ships and the sort of combat capabilities of each individual one. Of course, the captains object to this, and the beings relent and allow the ships to instead play capture the flag. The first of three captures wins. They've placed, let me see, I forget what the teams are exactly. The red and blue, the red include Kirk and Janeway on the original Enterprise and the Voyager, and blue includes Picard and Sisko.
Sisko.
Yes. Unfortunately, the beings find this to not be to their liking. It's a little slow, a little boring for them. So they bring in the Planet Killer, which, of course, the original series crew is quite familiar with. Together, the ships work to take out the Planet Killer thanks to the 23rd century quantum torpedoes, but not without a harrowing finish. And Benjamin Sisko and his ship seem quite in danger there for a moment. Picard's quantum torpedoes managed to sort of get the final blow. So Picard, as Q's choice, is sort of tapped as the winner for the second contest. But Q, going into the third contest, decides to bring in a fifth leader, or, well, he at least decides to bring in something a little more challenging in the Prophets. So, you know, another really solid issue. I really liked the first act quite a bit. I liked seeing all these beings sort of giving some coaching to their respective teams and, you know, the little bit of politics that were played in this interesting, like, interdimensional space. The whole lighting and coloring there has a very like dreamlike quality to it, so you know, you get the sense that it's not quite rooted in our universe. And then the second half, well, action-packed. It doesn't have quite the it doesn't have quite the arc that you would expect out of a regular episode, which usually has a couple twists and turns. It's definitely exciting, but you know, they have to wrap it up in 15 pages or maybe 10 pages or so. So it goes by pretty quickly. And yeah, and Picard comes out victorious. But a solid issue for sure. Like I said, my favorite was sort of the first half of the book. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the series.
And how many chevrons would you give this one? Story, artwork, you know, overall enjoyment?
I think the story probably 3.5, artwork probably 4. So that lands me, you know, somewhere between those overall, I think. It's, you know, I don't know that IDW's ever really had a dud. This one just, I thought the later half of the book was, didn't quite live up to the Q conflict on the whole.
And about you, Charles, what did you think about this book?
Well, it reminded me I needed to go back and review The Immortals. And I hadn't thought about this, but it's interesting that Trelane, Isleborn, I pronounce it, and Metron are all TOS immortals. And we have Q, which comes from TNG. So it's an interesting combination, I think, in there. I thought the beginning of the book was a little slow. TJ really liked it. I thought it was a little slow in there. Then they go and say, oh, we're just going to play catch a flag. And all four ships are kind of like a big whoop about it. So Trelane decides, hey, let's add a little flair to it. And I think we got a little more excitement the fact that we'd bring the Planet Killer out. And the fact that luckily each crew member has a TOS member. So they could sit there and bring them up to spec. Now, because it's a TOS enemy, I don't think the Trelane realized that Picard's ship actually was so far ahead of its time, it had a lot more power than the TOS era. So I liked how they kind of worked together to bring that in. But I thought at the end I really kind of enjoyed the story. Interesting way of doing it, but I like the little nitpick of saying, okay, let's bring cues. One of them sitting there holding one of the prophet cues. And like, oh, okay, we're going to kind of bring a little bit of DS9 in here, which should be interesting. So overall, I pretty much enjoyed it. I think I'll go with about a 3.5 on it. I think the artwork, some of the pictures are great. Some of them are a little faded. They're not as well detailed as it could have been.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've seen better artwork before. JK, I don't think JK did the artwork in this one. It doesn't have his style to it.
Nope.
Actually, unfortunately.
JK, I think, has been doing some Marvel stuff lately.
Yeah, and actually, none of the books that we're talking about tonight, JK was involved in, which is sad because I really like his style. I did enjoy seeing Captain Kirk having to deal with Worf, though, especially after, you know, Klingon bastards, you killed my son, and I have had enough of you, and kicking Krug off the precipice into the volcano, and seeing a Klingon in Starfleet dealing with Captain Kirk on the original Enterprise, I thought was a pretty cool twist. Eric, what did you think about the Q conflict issue number 3?
You know, I liked this issue quite a bit more than I liked issue 2. I was kind of with TJ where that first issue kind of got me interested in the story, but my interest fell off a little bit in the second issue, and then by this issue, I think I'm back into it. You know, we're talking about the style of the art. I do think that one of the things that is successful about the style of the art is that it's kind of playful. You know, it's colorful, it's kind of whimsical, it's kind of loose. And I think that sort of fits the style of the comic. I mean, this definitely is not written to be a serious comic with a, you know, with an important message to deliver. It's just kind of a free-for-all adventure. And I think that's why we like it. So I do like the art for that, even though I will say, out of all the characters in TOS, it feels like everybody has a hard time getting Chekhov right. in particular. I don't know why that is. I don't think Chekhov looks like Chekhov at all in this book. Everybody else is okay. Story-wise, I dug it. I kind of was a little bit with TJ. I sort of liked the beginning, and I liked it because what you see is you see some of these immortal beings like Elborn and the Metron are talking to each other at the beginning about everything that's wrong with Q. And you sort of find out a little bit more about the story that it's really not four different races fighting against each other. It sounds more like it's been the Q kind of attacking everybody else and pestering everybody else. So it's possible maybe the Q are the more powerful of these immortals if we're, you know, if we were to rank them on a power scale. But overall, I did like this book. I thought it was fun. You know, the story was fun. I don't think this is one that I'll go back and read over and over again, but it was worth the read that that it gave me. So I'm kind of with TJ. I'm right in that sort of, you know, 3.7, 3.8 chevrons out of 5 overall.
Excellent. And how about you, Jamie? You get to bring up the caboose on this issue. What did you think about it?
First of all, hello to everyone. It's been a while. It's glad to be back, at least talking about something Star Trek related. And I just want to say I loved the season finale of Star Trek Discovery Season 2. Wow, out of this world. And I'm really looking forward to what they do with the next season. Moving on to the Q conflict, I thought it was very well done. I definitely agree they could have done a little bit better job with the art, but it is what it is. I guess you can't have good art and a good story either, or sometimes you get that you just get lucky and you get good art and a good story. But I like the whole story. I would give that a 4, but I'm not too happy with the art either, so I'm going to give the art a 3 and the overall story a 4.
Yeah, I thought that some of the characters, like Eric mentioned, Chekhov in particular, were not the greatest. But then again, I think a lot of times when artists are doing an ongoing book, they get used to drawing Captain Picard or Captain Kirk, and that they draw them over and over, panel after panel after panel, and it just becomes second nature. But when you're drawing all these characters, and they're all from all different shows, every character isn't going to be the strength of any particular artist at any given time. So I give them some slack on that, but I'm right there with you guys. I'm about 3.7, I would say, overall on this one. It was a fun story, and I think it's something that a lot of fans, you know, are always into. And I think that's why they decided to do this particular story. It's kind of like the old Marvel's What If. You know, what if the Hulk went up against the Thing, stuff like that. So I think this is their version of What If, the Q conflict. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun read, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it all wraps up. So that wraps up the Q conflict issue number 3. We're not going to be taking predetermined breaks, but that doesn't mean we're not going to take a quick breather. So we'll be right back and have TJ introduce the next book, right after GM Chris and this very important message.
This is Chris from Trek Talking and Beyond, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction themed podcast on the internet. Our elite team of Trexperts are here to discuss Star Trek and other sci-fi related content, and we want to hear from you. Dial 646-668-2433 on Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on East Coast time. Hailing frequencies are always open, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinions. We have faith you will call.
And so, TJ, what's our next book that we're going to be talking about?
Sorry,
TJ?
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. All right, yeah, we're going to talk about Star Trek Waypoints 2019. This is a one-shot that they do seemingly once a year. It used to be an ongoing series. You can get the trade paperbacks now. And after that series finished up, they've been doing one shots of it since then. And it's cool because it's like four, in this issue anyways, it's four different series. And I seem to remember talking about last year's, and we were sort of split on some of the stories inside it. and you know, but overall quite liked it on the whole. I like these in particular because they're bound like a trade paperback. They're glue bound instead of stapled, and on really nice stock and stuff. And you know, if you're holding that in your hand and cracking it open, you know, you feel like you're not like taking ink off the cover and stuff because it's on this really glossy, nice paper. And I always sort of worry about that sort of thing. But yeah, and these four stories are sort of ways to, I think it's ways for like IDW to give a chance to some lesser known writers and artists who maybe have some cool ideas for some Star Trek stories. These aren't writers and artists that we've seen very much of in the past year. You know, no Tipton's or, you know, JK or David Messina or, you know, some of the more traditional names that we've been seeing quite a bit of through IDW's tenure as Star Trek comic publishers. Instead, you get some people that, you know, are sort of up and coming and are just getting a chance to show some of their work. And it's a really cool way to get like 10, 12 pages out there and tell a quick and cool story. So would you like to go through like each one individually and get some reactions and then move to the next one? Since we got four in here.
Yeah, there's four individual stories. So I think we should tackle each story individually because they're separate stories, right?
Mm-hmm. They are. Yeah, very much so. Cool. Well, up first, we have Hearts and Bones. And this is a short story from the original series era, sort of with a point of view of Bones. It opens, it's got like this sort of cold open in the middle of the story of the USS Enterprise in orbit around Vulcan, and Dr. McCoy talking to sort of talking through a door at somebody that we can't quite see, and he seems to have offended them. As such, he leaves sort of distraught, stumbles across Spock in the hallway and tells him, like, listen, Spock, I can't quite deal with you right now. I need somebody who's going to be able to aid me and work through this emotionally and not logically. So who does he go to? But Captain Kirk, and they meet up in Kirk's quarters later in the day to talk about sort of Bones' heartbreak and the fact that he's going through this stuff right before he goes into surgery. And Kirk, of course, suave as he ever is like, you know, he's trying to give him some tips on how to woo this woman when we discover that, you know, maybe this isn't the most obvious choice for Bones because this woman that he's trying to woo is a Vulcan doctor from the Vulcan Medical Council who's here to sort of observe and participate in a surgery that's happening tomorrow. The surgery goes okay, even though McCoy seems to be a little distracted by his this Vulcan woman that he sort of has the hots for, if you will. To celebrate the successful surgery, round two comes along, as it were, and Captain Kirk, Bones, and Dr. Fan, I believe, Fa'an? Yes, Tahan. Bones, Spock, Kirk, and Dr. Tahan have a dinner together with, of course, Spock saying something to upset Bones that dynamic often finds itself. Unfortunately, you know, Dr. Tahan seems to understand, but pretty much once again at the end, tells him to not bother her. She's, you know, here on work. And Spock finally has a final confrontation with Bones saying, like, hey, maybe you should just give up, basically. So sort of an odd story. I mean, I quite like the art. It seemed sort of reminiscent of some vintage comics in its shading and coloring and penciling. The arc of the whole thing is interesting. He starts out defeated, sort of has a ray of hope, and ends up defeated in the end because he doesn't get the girl, which is a very Vulcan arc, story arc, I suppose. Fun enough and nice to see Bones in sort of a different light, and that great dynamic between Spock and Bones is very present. But the, on the whole, the arc is an interesting one.
And how about you, Charles? What did you think about this story?
Well, the story kind of gives me the impression of Bones as a lovesick puppy. And interesting idea, but I just don't picture Bones being that lovesick. And then it becomes a little bit of a fight, a little bickering fight between him and Spock. And I know we got the Bones-Spock bit in there, but I'm not sure at the point of wondering who would be egging on who. But this was definitely not one of my favorites in this set. Yeah,
no,
it's a nice visit to TOS, but I would have loved to have seen a slightly different storyline on this one.
Yeah, I agree with you, Charles. I think that McCoy was a little bit maybe out of character a little bit, might be the best way. Out of character, but not himself to be pining over a Vulcan of all people possible. But I thought the artwork was decent. The characters looked like the characters, and it felt like an episode of Star Trek, other than McCoy's little situation. It's not my favorite one in the book. My favorite one is number four, but
Here's a question, because I've been looking at, especially books we've been reading recently. How often did we see Bones with a decanter of brandy visiting Kirk? Because that sure seems to be a theme right now.
Well, that could be an homage. That could be an homage back to the cage too, and the doctor in the cage bringing Pike the suitcase with the brandy inside.
But
yeah,
that was referenced. I know McCoy brought him a drink a couple of times, but that just seemed like a very hit point in two different books.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but perhaps. And what would you rate this, Charles? The story.
The first story. About a
2.5. 2.5? Wow. You're up next, Eric. Can you beat a 2.5?
Oh man, I guess I'm I'm coming to start to think that maybe I'm the one in the group that just really likes stories that have to do with love and romance and that kind of stuff. I really actually like this story. I found it super heartwarming. I did think that it was a little out of character to see Bones in this story, but I also remember that the comics can kind of be those B stories, you know, those stories that happen behind the stories. And I kind of like being able to see a different side of him. I mean, I feel like on the original series, what you often still get is you'll get him maybe raising his eyebrows at a pretty woman or doing the things that men would sort of do back in the 60s a little bit more than they do now on television. And I feel like in this story, you find out that Bones really does have a heart. And that he can't help himself. Gosh darn it, Vulcans frustrate the heck out of him, but all of a sudden he has found himself kind of pining for this one. And I love that idea that he can't help himself, that, you know, if were he to make the choice, he would probably be interested in somebody else, but you can't always choose what your heart tells you to do. So I actually really like that part of the story. I thought the art was great. TJ, you sort of referenced back to some older comics. I got that too. I actually thought about some old pulp magazines when I saw this. And the reason I love this particular style of art personally so much is I feel like somehow it manages to use textures and crosshatches a lot more than they use in today's comics. Like, all of the shading is all this old school kind of crosshatch shading and that kind of stuff. And I just love the idea or the feeling that it gives you that this was actually drawn with a pen. And I don't know if it was. It was probably drawn digitally, I would guess. But it has that feel of really being drawn with a pen. And the likenesses are really good. Even the faraway shots, which sometimes are hard to get detail in, you can still recognize the characters pretty clearly. So overall, I dug this story. Like I said, it was heartwarming. It was this kind of little B story about Bones. And, of course, I love that he goes to Kirk and Spock for romantic advice. I thought that was a great kind of two sides of the coin thing too. So I don't know, out of 5 chevrons, I'd probably give this one about 4.5 or so. I really dug it.
4.5. All right. That's cool. I can dig it. I can dig it. How about you, Jamie? What would you think about this particular story?
Yeah, well, you can't have a comic book or any book for that matter that doesn't have A story or B story and some other side story, but I thought all the stories fit well together, especially that one. And I really appreciate the romance part of it. I mean, romance is always in there somewhere, even in the Star Trek movies, and of course in Discovery, any Star Trek has that in it. And I just had the feeling of it was just like any romance movie where, you know, he has feelings and Bones just can't help himself. I mean, everyone can relate. You have a crush on someone, I mean, you lose your mind. You just go crazy. And he just went crazy. And while he was trying to keep himself together, working with this Vulcan, and which he had a crush on. But it was kind of like in high school when the guy is kicking the girl's chair because he doesn't know how to go up and just say hello. But, it was good. I liked it. I'm going to give all this one a 5. It was good.
A 5. All right. Well, there you have it. Jamie gives it a 5. So, TJ, how about our next story?
Yes, up next is Unfathomed by Corinna Bechko and Daniel Irizarry. So this takes place in the TNG period, specifically sort of the first season, because Tasha Yar has a major part to play in this few pages here. And we open with Beverly Crusher and Picard in Picard's not Captain Quarters, but his ready room. Yeah. They're sort of orbiting nearby this planet with a corporate freighter nearby, and they're arguing about whether or not the mission they're about to take on is a purely medical one or needs a larger away team. Beverly, of course, saying, "Hey, I don't need any help. This is a mission of compassion," quote unquote. But Picard assigns Tasha Yar to the mission as well. So they take a shuttle over to this corporate freighter to find out that it's only about a third manned. Its crew seems to have been absent, and specifically a captain. This ship has no captain, and the crewmen are wondering, like, what's happening? Why is this going on? Only to discover that they're sort of carrying this special storage container that shrinks things to down to size and enables it to store it inside this, like, room-sized orb. Beverly Crusher goes to touch the orb and is sucked inside to discover that all of the crewmen and the captain of this ship are sort of waiting around inside and trying to escape, but there's no interaction between the sort of pocket dimension and the greater world, except for occasionally the ability to rap on the walls or knock something over. And unfortunately, though, when you are sucked inside of this storage orb, everybody sort of forgets that you've ever existed, which obviously presents a problem for both the crew of this freighter and Beverly, who's now stuck inside of it. Luckily, she thinks pretty quickly and is able to send a message writing in the dust of the floor of the storage bay, and enough to remind Tasha Yar who she is and hopefully get her out of this. They do it successfully, and the crew is saved. Beverly Crusher and Tasha Yar, despite their animosity towards each other at the beginning of the mission, come to an understanding that they were both sort of needed, and return to the Enterprise safely. This has a really, really unique style, art style for a Star Trek book, unlike much we've seen from IDW. It's a little cartoony and exaggerated and really saturated in its color. The people on the freighter have like sort of edgy haircuts for Star Trek, obviously because they're not in Starfleet, so they've got like cool fashion and a cool faux hawk with green hair and stuff. So on the whole, the art is a little more rock and roll than we get out of a lot of Star Trek books, which I really liked. I have a feeling that I will be alone in this, but I like the more cartoony, exaggerated style in comics. I like that in comics you're able to sort of stretch and squash and shade and do things you normally wouldn't be able to do out, you know, in another medium. So I found it really fun. The coloring's great, adds a real, you know, sense of threat and danger to the whole thing with this red overtone. And the story on the whole, quick, not incredibly dense, but fun. And, you know, you get some nice interaction between a couple of the coolest ladies on the Enterprise. So I quite like this.
And how about you, Charles? What'd you think?
Okay. I was looking through of them and something kind of caught my attention. I looked the first panel on this one, and they go straight in the story. I would look at the other ones, and each of the other ones give a title or something to kind of let us know we're going to a new story. So this one kind of threw me off, the fact that, okay, we go straight in, and there's not even a title to the episode. So I thought that was a little bit off on it. The story was interesting. As I agree, it's a little more cartoony, a little more animated looking. I thought the story arc was kind of an interesting idea to it. Interesting little twist at the end of how Beverly responded, how she used that cue to get herself rescued, and then how she admits to not being. It was an okay story. It wasn't. This kind of reminded me what would be in Star Trek as a second or third tier story. You'd have the main episode, and this would be a side mission. So I'll go with about 3.2
chevrons. How about you, Eric?
Well, I'm going to agree that the art style is completely unique from anything I think we've seen before in a Star Trek comic. And I'm kind of with TJ. I dug it. I think it's somewhere between like heavy metal and like Mad Magazine. it's kind of cartoony, you know.
Yeah.
It's not something we're used to. It would be harder for me to take this style really seriously in like a very dramatic story, because it does feel so cartoony and kind of adventure-y. So on the art side of things, I didn't mind the style. I thought it was interesting and something different. And I like that this book gives us four stories that all have four really, really different styles. That's what I think about the art. The story, I was completely confused most of the time. I just didn't find it very compelling, this idea of this machine that, you know, is like the TARDIS. You can stuff a bunch of stuff inside of it, or it has a whole different dimension inside of it. Great. But I think the reason that I really didn't like it was I just didn't like the writing on Tasha Yar at all. She spent the whole issue kind of being angry and asking tough questions. And, you know, I think they're trying to push her as the tough security officer, It was hard for me to tell if, you know, maybe once Beverly disappeared, maybe that somehow changed and made Tasha a different person somehow. Maybe she was a little bit more aggressive than she would have been normally. I just didn't think the way she was written was accurate to the portrayal that we saw of that character on TNG personally. I didn't really like the story, but the art was interesting and fun. So I guess overall, maybe I'll give this one about a 3.5 or so.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Eric. I thought the story, the artwork was definitely weird. I noticed it right away. It was nothing as compared to the artwork in the first story. It was way different. Tasha Yar was a bit strange. Maybe whoever was writing it, maybe they were born after TNG and they didn't know who Tasha Yar was, and they had to write this character that they never saw. I don't know, but you're right. Tasha Yar was off.
Interesting because I feel like in that first story, like you said, Jim, it read exactly like a TOS episode, right? You could just hear those characters speaking in their own voices when you read that story. And I didn't get the sense that anything that was said in this one or any of the dialogue was really, was really coming from those characters. So, you know, interesting observation. I wonder if it was written by somebody who's not as familiar with TNG, although maybe, yeah. Interesting.
Well, that's the way I read it. Obviously, whoever wrote it wasn't familiar with the material, but I could be wrong. And Jamie, what do you think about this story?
Yeah, I mean, first off, the art was definitely unique. I didn't really care for it. I just liked the more traditional style. But hey, it was didn't take me to the story. The story was still good. I would give the story a 4 and the art a 3 overall.
Yeah,
the first with Deanna Troi and how she handled herself in all those situations.
You know, it was nice to see Tasha Yar again. I mean, she's often overlooked and forgotten because she was only in the first season. But it was nice to see her. When I opened it up, oh, a Tasha story. Took me a little bit to figure out who she was, though, because the artwork was kind of wonky, but, you know, it was nice to see her. So we're going to have Charles give us a quick message here, and when we come back, TJ is going to introduce us to the next story.
Hi, this is Sub-Commander Charles from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction-themed podcast on the Internet. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and related science fiction content. And we want to hear from you. Dial 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Coast Time. And we'll get you on the air to share your opinion. Or you can also find us on Facebook. We have faith that you will call.
All right, TJ. So what's our next story in the Waypoint book?
Yes, our third story of Star Trek Waypoint 2019 is called The Swift Spoke. And it joins, correct me if I'm wrong, this is my understanding. I was a little, I had to go back and reread this one. This is Captain Janeway in her time on the USS Billings. So this is pre-Voyager.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I guess that makes sense now.
Yeah,
I believe she's a commander in this one. Yeah,
she's second officer. You know, the Voyager is a pretty large hole in my Star Trek knowledge. I've watched, you know, a couple dozen episodes, but there's plenty more that I have not seen. So I'm not overtly familiar with it compared to, like, TNG or TOS. So as I said, pre-Voyager, takes a look at Janeway and Tuvok's time on the USS Billings. They're sent down on a mission to this planet, making sort of first contact with the Arali Prime, the people inhabitants. They beam down there, or rather take a shuttle down there through these cloudy, the storm, and finally land and touch down, wondering where their hosts are when they sort of transform out of these giant crystalline structures, and these very alien peoples make contact, and they go through sort of through formalities, but pretty quickly things go awry when they believe a storm is coming, and this giant sort of alien ship takes the horizon by storm and begins attacking seemingly the hosts and our crew members. Throughout this, we have these panels of this really large, like, letterbox lettering of sound effects, thooms and fooms and fashooms, and we begin to find out that we're sort of phasing between dimensions, and the crew then is on the run and seemingly thinks they're being attacked by their new host, thinking that they were set up and walked into a trap. But eventually they realize that this phasing is maybe it's not an attack. It just happens to be that these beings are sort of forced to phase between these couple dimensions. They manage to make it off planet and decide that, you know, maybe these people didn't have it out for us, but we're going to have to figure out some other way to get in contact with them and begin, like, you know, talking to them and negotiations and the things that Starfleet does. And Tuvok and Janeway sort of bond over this experience, finding something that really no Starfleet crew has ever found before, and it strengthens their bond. At the beginning of the story, Janeway was sort of not looking forward to going on an away mission with Tuvok, but after this, they seem to have sort of, you know, now they have a shared history, and they're starting to form that relationship. The art in general, you know, we get another different style, very different from the first two mini stories inside this one shot. It's a little lighter, you know, very light on the penciling, and the coloring is, you know, has all these soft gradients. I unfortunately did not recognize Janeway. Tuvok, obviously, very recognizable. The design of the creatures is really cool, and the lettering of their speech is really interesting. The ship that is attacking them, seemingly from the other dimension, is very strange looking, very, very alien. And overall, you get some cool design. You get, you know, the start of that bond between captain and first officer, and the introduction to a new species. So, another sort of fine story, I suppose.
Yeah, I this was my least favorite of the four. Like you said, I didn't even recognize Janeway. The artwork was stranger than the last story. And I didn't really care for the story all that much either. So this was my least favorite of the four. What do you think, Charles? What do you think about the story?
I agree with you on this one. I think this was definitely a weak story. It was confusing. We really weren't sure what was going on till the end. And then it still didn't make sense. I didn't even realize it was Janeway on the Billingsley. I guess I missed that part of even realizing how it was tied in. I figured there was might have been an early Voyager or something. But it's definitely was confusing. The artwork wasn't as detailed, which was all right. But I think the story just was confusing. And I agree, it wasn't my favorite story. And I think I'm going to agree with Jim. I know which one he likes best.
Yeah, we're getting to my favorite one next. And Eric, what'd you think?
You know, I probably like this story just a little bit more than that. First of all, I thought it was kind of interesting that the artist and colorist actually co-wrote the story also. So we don't often see crossover between the writer and the person doing the art in these comics, which I bet means that this was like that person's, you know, one of a little pet project that this person had going. And it was an idea that they had, and they brought it forward, and maybe IDW picked it up and published it. I like when it's set. I like being able to see a little bit of early Janeway, because I do like Captain Janeway. I think that her writing was pretty inconsistent during Voyager, but when she's at her strongest, she's an amazing captain. And I like kind of seeing her in an earlier iteration. I didn't realize that she had actually served with Tuvok before the Voyager. And that's, there's probably, it's probably just because I haven't seen Voyager in a while, but I was never sure, right? I am no longer sure how Tuvok made his way onto the Voyager, except through this comic. Now I'm realizing she knew him before then and probably brought him along. Like TJ was saying, I think one of the cool things about a comic like this is you can more easily explore aliens that aren't just humans with bumps on their foreheads. So these aliens look really, really foreign. They look really cool, though. They have all these arms, and they're kind of liquidy, and they just have an amazing kind of uniqueness to them. And Charles, I think you're right. The story was a little confusing with the snapping in and out of different realities. I didn't mind that. I actually kind of thought it was a little interesting. I mean, there wasn't a lot of depth to the story. It was kind of like things were just happening, and they were never really able to explore or learn more about what was going on. And then at the very, very end of the story, I think the worst part is the last two panels just say, you know, Janeway says, "What a fascinating people, Mr. Tuvok." And Tuvok says, "Indeed." And that's it. That's the end of the story. So to me, the story felt like it's a prelude to something much greater. Like if they were to expand this into a story where they actually went back and, you know, learned more about these aliens and figured out a way to deal with the whole dimensional shifting thing, I think it could be really compelling. And I thought the art was, you know, I mean, it was okay. It was kind of light and dreamy, which kind of fit the story style. So I didn't mind that. So, you know, overall, I thought the story ended kind of weakly, but I didn't completely mind it. This was not my least favorite one, though, so I'll put it right in that 3.9 range or so. Yeah.
Well, you know, Eric, it reminded me of an episode of the animated series of Star Trek, is what I got the feeling of.
Yeah.
An episode of TAS.
You know, that's so true. And I feel like a lot of those older TV shows actually did end that way, where there was kind of a almost like a rhetorical ending to the story where everybody just kind of goes, "Huh, son of a gun." And that's the end of the story, you know. But what if the prelude to like a book where they actually explored these aliens a little bit more? I mean, I still have no idea what's going on, right? How are they snapping between realities? What is that big black thing? Is there a war going on? Like, we basically come out of the story not knowing anything more than when we went in, which I think is why it feels a little unsatisfying. But I feel like if they were to develop the story more, it could get really interesting.
And how about you, Jamie? You get to bring up the caboose yet again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this story just didn't have that ending that was really satisfying. It left you with that awkward cliffhanger where it's just, okay, so what's next? Maybe there's a greater ending, or maybe they just did that purposely. I don't know. It just didn't sit well with me either. I think they could have made the ending a little bit better, but the art could have been better. That wasn't so great. There was a lot of things that was kind of a little confusing because they didn't draw the characters as they should have, or they shouldn't. They could sit in the camera and draw them, which made the story a little confusing. But as far as the dialogue boxes replaced, I thought that was fine. It all seemed to make sense, but the art was just a little off. So with that being said, I'm going to give this story a
3.5. That's cool. And TJ, we're gonna talk about my favorite one next. Why don't you do the intro?
I would be happy to. So this final issue, final mini story in Waypoint 2019 is the first year, and we open up in the first city of Kronos with seemingly Worf getting some directive, an assignment in his time as ambassador to Kronos from Starfleet. But before he can attend to that assignment, he is paid a visit by Ezri Dax. He's not super happy to see her, obviously. It's been 1 year since Jadzia died. And, you know, they were very close, and unfortunately that's still weighing heavy on Worf's mind. He's been trying to fill that hole with some work, even though it's not his favorite position he's been posted to. He carries it out dutifully. And he goes, they head out to Korvan to sort of rebuke, or rather to not punish, discipline. Thank you. Discipline one of the Empire's liaisons to Andor. But that's really secondary to the emotional sort of maturing that Ezra Dax is helping Worf work through. And throughout this, we get these panels of Ezra Dax talking to Worf, and then like flashes of Jadzia in the art as well, which is a really interesting way to show that she's still very much present in Worf's mind and sort of throughout this story. Unfortunately, you know, Worf quite angered at this, and they go through an awesome bat-less fight, Ezra Dax and Worf do, with Jadzia sort of looking over the shoulder and trying to help Worf through this whole thing. He pretty quickly disciplines the ambassador when the time comes, and Worf realizes, like, hey, maybe this job isn't for me. I wish you wouldn't have come, but you have helped me through this grieving process. And, you know, maybe it's time to move on to something different, you know, not so isolated, and begin to find new work and move forward, which I thought was really cool. The art is maybe a little more traditional towards what we find inside the Star Trek books. You know, really great likenesses. Nothing of particular note in stylization. You know, of course, it's a little cartoony, but on the whole, it's on the more realistic side compared to like some of the former stories we had in this one shot. You got some really cool stuff in the lettering, the I did not run, or now stop talking, and in the bat-less fight, you know, really, really impactful. You can tell the rage is truly coming out of Worf. And a lot of really cool paneling and playing with, you know, breaking outside of the boundaries of those boxes and stuff. So the art's really strong in this one. Seems a little more familiar for some of the IDW readers. And the story is really impactful. It, you know, really going through this grieving process with Worf and a friend trying to be there, even though she's really close to the source of this issue. So, you know, a great couple character pieces and a cool insight into Worf's time as ambassador.
Yeah, obviously, this was my favorite story. Obviously, being Klingon Jim, I thought it was great to see Worf, because we never get to see what happens with Worf when he leaves at Martok. When Deep Space Nine is over, he leaves with Martok to go and reorganize the Klingon Empire, and that's the last we see of Worf. He's gone. And so now we get to see where he is and what's going on with him. I thought it was great that he was wearing the Klingon ambassador's costume that John Shuck wore in Star Trek IV. When he was saying, as long as Kirk lives, there will be no peace. He was wearing that same outfit, which I thought was really cool. The artwork is exactly like TJ said. This is your classic Star Trek comic artwork. You know, the Klingons look like Klingons. Everybody looked like everybody. This was my favorite story. I enjoyed it. The artwork was great. The story to catch up with Worf. There was only one thing about it. Is where when it ended, and Worf says, "I'm going to call the Captain Picard on the Enterprise," and that was the only part that made me. I said, "Wait a second, wait a minute. The Enterprise. We don't even know if there is even an Enterprise at this point in time, because the Enterprise got destroyed in Nemesis and was being rebuilt. There was a new first officer. B4 was on it." This takes place, you know, after that. So that was the only part I was like, well, wait a minute, whatever. But I'll set that aside.
He actually says that he needs to speak with Picard. He actually doesn't mention the Enterprise. So
well,
wherever Picard is, maybe Picard's hanging out on a starbase or something.
But we know that Picard won't be anywhere but on the, well, unless we're talking the new Picard series, we'll have to wait and see. But that, I was like, all right, yeah, okay. I would have loved to see Martok show up. That would have really, really made me blow a blood vessel if Martok showed up. But I love this story, and I love the artwork. Everything about it I thought was top-notch. Really, really good. Jamie, you know what? We're going to jump in and have you, instead of you bringing up the caboose, we're going to let you take the lead on this. Well, what did you think about this story?
Yeah, I'll start out with the story. So I thought the story was solid. I'm going to give this one a 5. They couldn't have laid it out better, and everything seemed to flow. There was nothing that really stood out to me that didn't make any sense. And then secondly, the artwork was great. Everything was in the traditional sense, as we've been talking about. It was, nothing was unclear. Worf looked like Worf. All the characters looked like themselves. The colors, the way they were drawn, I loved it. It definitely wasn't like that odd story that we read about in the beginning of the book. But hey, I'm all for a different style, but I really liked that they got back to it. Said, okay, let's reel these people back in and get back to a traditional style that everybody knows and loves. I felt like I was watching an episode of TOS, and then another one I was watching an animated series. But hey, that's what makes a good comic book. You know, if you're not saying I had one of those aha moments, it's not a good book or comic, but I liked it. And then the bat lifts were in there. So, you know, but hey, what kind of a Klingon story would it be without a batliff fight? So.
Yeah, and you know how those batliffs are, Jamie. When I whip out my batliff, everybody wants to touch it. You know how that is.
Yep.
Even TJ has touched my batliff, right, TJ?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I got a picture to prove it. So, Charles, what do you think about this one?
Well, as I was reading this one, I was reading it and said, wait a minute. They're in the car or this vehicle. And I see Jadzia. Then it's not Jadzia. It's like, wait a minute. Why is the color change in there? It's like, okay, that's strange. And I kept going, but as we got in the arena and they started talking, and all of a sudden we're seeing both of them. In fact, we got a chance to see Ezri, Dax, and the mirror side of Dax. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I'm getting the story. I'm understanding. And as TJ mentioned, we got spots where we go from regular text to block text. And the block text just takes you into the, okay, you really get thinking on the story. It kind of throws you in as we're going back and forth with the different taxes. And to see Worf trying to sit there and deal with his emotions. And then to finally get a realization. And all of a sudden this guy is like, oh, yeah, I'm here for a discipline. And they're just sitting there having a lover's quarrel. And I like how Worf handles it. It's like, yeah, smacks him. It's like, you're right. And I love how Worf says, you know what? I think I'm going to discipline him by making him take my job, since he seems to be having problem dealing with people of other cultures. I agree. I think this was the strongest story in the book. This really made me feel like it was a DS9 episode or a TNG episode. This put me back more into the straight, true series of what you expect from these characters. But I also like the fact that you have the Klingons. Jim loves this part. You have the Klingons. You see all the ridges in the Klingons. You see the Dax, and all of her spots are in there, just perfect and just the way they should be. Exactly the way I expect these characters to look.
Very well done.
This was my favorite of the four. I would say definitely a 4.5 on this one because they did a good story, good artwork. 4.8.
And Eric, you get to be the caboose on this one. You're following up a 4.8. What do you got to say?
Woo! Well, I also am overly totally into this story. Great story. Great dive into, you know, what Worf's still dealing with a year after his wife died. I mean, it's a big deal. And it's kind of nice that they're able to use Ezri in this way. The only reason that I hesitate a little bit is I'm a little torn. So this story is 10 pages. Of those 10 pages, Jadzia appears on 7 of them. So I guess I really appreciate the use of kind of flipping to the Jadzia visage when Worf is kind of, you know, thinking about the words that Ezri is saying. So you're getting more of the view from inside his head rather than the view of what's actually going on outside. But I felt like it was a little heavy-handed. And I'm only criticizing it because I thought the story was so good that I'm trying to poke a couple of holes in it. And the only reason I complain about it a little bit is that I feel like stories like this just continue to diminish the Ezri character a little bit. You know, so many people are kind of anti-Ezri anyway, even though she's a Dax, even though she contains all of the memories of all the Daxes that we know and love from the past. And so the fact that they use Jadzia so much in this one, I feel like they maybe could have done it like 2 or 3 times in strategic moments, and you would have still gotten the same idea without it being so heavy-handed. That being said, I love all the things you guys are talking about. I love the block text. There's this really cool scene where Worf is like looking through the batleth, through the hole in the batleth, and he's seeing the reflection of Ezri in the batleth, but then in the next panel, it's Jadzia that he's seeing. So just the way that they're kind of playing with that idea of what's going on inside his head and what's going on out in reality at the same time, I just thought that was really clever. There's another great view where they sort of show a close-up of his face, and then the split is kind of a white silhouette, and then there's a sun on the other side. It's just very artistically done. So I agree. Between the two, I like the first and the fourth stories, but this one was probably overall the strongest just because it allows us to dive a little bit deeper into this Worf character, and it also allows us to see him kind of put the smackdown on this other Klingon who done him wrong, which was kind of fun.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear a little message from Eric, and when we come back, TJ is going to introduce us to our final book of the night. Don't go away.
Hi, this is Eric from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction themed podcast on the internet. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and related sci-fi content, and we want to hear from you. Call into the show Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on the East Coast, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinions. We have faith that you'll call.
All right, TJ, so finish off the show with our final book of the night.
Yes, our final book, which has been, I think, much anticipated from all of us and probably the Star Trek community at large, the comic reading community at large. It had the cover photo for previews a couple months back was this book. And ever since then, you know, knowing a new ongoing is coming has been super, super exciting. And that is, of course, Star Trek Year 5, number 1, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, with art by Stephen Thompson. I want to, I wish I could find, I should have looked it up earlier, but the cover, Greg Hildebrandt has the regular cover, the sort of cover A, if you will. Such an awesome cover, like an old movie poster with the full crew sort of throughout it, and the Starship Enterprise, just a great painterly style to it, and a lot of really great color. So yeah, super, really pops off there. And then we get the start of this ongoing, which I wasn't sure how it was going to go, like if it was each issue was going to be sort of like an episode or if we would have sort of the more traditional like trade length arcs per issue. We finally sort of found it out, and I think it's much more the latter than it is the former. It seems the storyline isn't going to wrap up in a single issue, which I'm kind of really into. It lets them, have more moments and dive deeper into the single storyline and have some A and B stories going on, unlike the stuff in Waypoint, which obviously they have like 12 pages for, so there's not really a whole lot of time to dive into some character stuff or like have a B story. You sort of have to set the stage, tell the story, and wrap it up. And in this, that's like not the case at all. So Star Trek Year 5 is, as you might guess, the fifth year of the adventures of the voyages, if you will, of the Starship Enterprise. And we open with sort of a cold open of the captain's log, a final entry. Some mysterious shadowy assailant with a gun to Captain Kirk's head as he sits in the captain's chair giving one final captain's log. And it is the monologue that we all know so very well. And after that sort of one-page cold open, we jump to a flashback that sets the stage for the current mission of the USS Enterprise, which is to place this piece of technology, let me see if I can find it really quickly, the Einstein-Rosen Ouroboros, which will contain the energy of this supernova, of these like twin stars that are about to go supernova, the Lloyd Zeta hypergiant, the single most massive stellar object ever detected by Starfleet. It's about to sort of explode, and Starfleet has created this piece of technology to sort of contain that explosion. But it's a very dangerous mission, fit only for the crew of the Enterprise. We get little moments from sort of all the crew people. You know, you get Spock sort of not objecting to the mission, but stating the dangers of it. Captain Kirk really, you know, forging on ahead and despite his trepidation, knowing that that's the mission. You get Scotty complaining to Spock about some of the technology that his science officers have not lived up to supplying. And you get this great scene, probably my favorite scene of the whole issue, between Bones and Kirk drinking once again some Saurian brandy pre-mission. And Kirk goes on to talk about his father's collection of sort of literature classics, and specifically Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey, and his sort of some of the reasons he does the things he does. And I think the Odyssey is such a great allegory for this fifth year of Captain Kirk. You know, he's sort of on his way home now, in a sense. You know, he's on the other side of his 5-year mission, but he's still got plenty to do before he gets home, and he's got he'll be a changed man by the time he gets home, if he gets home, though he seems pretty sure for some reason he's foreshadowing that they're not going to make it home. This supernova was supposed to take place in a lifeless system. Unfortunately, for our crew, they get a distress beacon from Lloyd Zeta 9 and discover that it's a Tholian planet, and have some difficulties finding any Tholians. It turns out because they're all dead. How could that be possible? Well, they surmise it's probably some sort of civil war between the Tholians. They encounter one, a live one, and manage to take it out with some quick thinking from Spock and Captain Kirk, only to realize that a Tholian ship has warped like right next to the USS Enterprise. So they decide to make their way back up to their ship, but not without first finding a live sort of adolescent Tholian little baby who is cute in a certain sense. And they decide to take him up to the ship as well. So things are sort of beginning to unravel just at the start of this first issue. I think they're setting up a lot of really cool stuff, though, between the science mission, the Tholians, the stuff going on in the bridge, Captain Kirk's you know, who am I, what am I doing, what am I going to do when this is all over sort of thing. He gets an offer to be an admiral, but is not sure whether or not he's capable of doing that anymore after spending 4 years out in the wild west of space. So yeah, lots of really cool setup inside this issue, and the art is just phenomenal. Such great angles for the, you know, throughout the panels of these low shots and these establishing shots and these outer space shots, and you know, just really interesting sort of camera positioning. All the action seems really fast and impactful, and the shading and the likeness of the characters is really, really strong. Really, really just outstanding art inside this thing, I think. You know, it feels very much like a TOS episode. Not like an animated series episode, but truly like an original series one. So really strong first issue, I thought, setting up a lot of really cool stuff. And if the art stays like this, you know, if they can keep the artist on, we're in for quite a treat, I think.
And how about you, Charles? What do you think about it?
Well, we start the story off with quite a bit of techno babble, which got a little confusing in spots, trying to understand what happened. And, of course, as mentioning before, there's Bones with another flask of brandy again, which is why I mentioned that hit in there. I thought the planet visit was interesting, especially how Bones, we get another, I'm a doctor, not a geologist. But then have a kind of look at seeing how the Tholian was injured, how they was killed. And then to have the living one, attacking one, come up. And that, as Kirk had just said, you can't damage them with phasers. And yet the security officers are immediately trying to go after with phasers. And, of course, we get the usual red shirt joke. But one of the things that I'm not sure if anybody else caught that's rather interesting is after the battle, you see a yellow box in there, and I kind of caught it in between and had to go back and read each of those yellow boxes in order. Skip all the text, but just read that thought box of Kirk in there. Now, that was an interesting combination of seeing his thought all the way up to the end of the issue. I agree, the artwork's well done on this one. This is definitely a TOS story that fits in. And I'm kind of confused in spots of it, but I'm still at the point like, yeah, well, we got that intro that kind of gives us a worry something's going to happen to the ship, and then goes into the story. So leaving me hanging, saying, okay, I want to know what happened. So I'm definitely interested in waiting to see what happens with issue two.
And how about you, Eric? What do you think about year five, book one?
I was absolutely blown away by this issue. I thought it was fantastic. The art was amazing. I thought the story was great. This is an issue that I immediately, as soon as I read it, I went back and I read it again because I just felt like I had already missed some things, which is one of the reasons that we say we like discovery, right? You can watch it so many different times and pick up all these other things. So I feel like this comic does that. TJ was exactly correct. The panels were just beautifully laid out. I feel like they didn't waste a single panel in this whole book. Everyone is meaningful. There's a lot of text. I love, once again, just to reiterate the whole connection and learning more about Kirk's father and his love for all of that old literature and the fact that he actually memorized it and felt like it was important to recite it back to Kirk, not just for Kirk to read it, but for Kirk to hear it, which I think is actually a valid point. You know, I think especially as at least modern day Americans, we like to hear our stories and kind of absorb them that way often. And so we have things like television, radio, and that sort of stuff. So great story, great overall story arc. I'm really interested in what's going on. for some reason, it feels like this comic fell with a lot more weight than all the other comics. This one feels, it feels official. It feels like, yeah, these are the stories that happened in year five. And just the overall quality of this story altogether made it feel like it's just a really official piece. So I don't know why it had that sort of impact on me, but I found the story very compelling.
And how about you, Jamie? What did you think about this story?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with everything that's been said so far. The art was great. I know I say that a lot, but this was just wow. And my favorite thing, I want to just point out this cover and put up on the wall. It makes a great piece of artwork for the wall, but that was just it would be perfect. But anyway, having said that, I think that they couldn't have told the story better. I like how they wrote out all the dialogue boxes. And I just, it felt like your and you know, going back through the years, I just was getting flashbacks to, you know, both the animated series and this as I was reading it. I think they just did a really great job of explaining everything that has happened leading up until this particular story. And I'm just looking forward to seeing how they continue this.
And if you're listening to the sound of my voice right now and you'd like to join in, make sure you go to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond, spelled out. Send us a message and say, I'd like a copy of this. And I'm holding an issue number one right here, the issue that we just talked about, right here in my hand, to send us a message. And we'll collect all the names and we'll draw a winner that we will announce on our very next Comic Corner. So if you'd like a copy of this book, please go to our Facebook page, shoot us a message, and you could have a copy of this book in your hand. Overall, I thought this was a good book. I enjoyed the artwork. I enjoyed the story. I just had one question, though. Why did they call it year five? They skipped over year four. Star Trek only had three seasons. You know?
Yeah.
They just
go ahead,
skipped a season.
I was looking this book up on Amazon to make sure I had all my orders in. And let me go relook up.
Yeah, because they're not counting the animated series. Because none of the animated characters are in this, so.
That is because there already has been a year four. Including by DC Fontana. I'm not sure who the publisher is. There's already been a series called Star Trek Year 4.
I
was not aware of that.
That'd be something. Huh.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
All right. I'm going to have to do some research.
It is an IDW. IDW has already done a Year 4 back in 2008.
Aha. We missed it, boys.
Wow. 11 years ago. Well, there you have it. Well, guys, I want to say this Comic Corner has definitely been a lot of fun. We had a good time. We had a lot of books to cover. It's why we went to a longer show than we normally have, but it was well worth it. Depending on how many books we have in the future, we can always go to the same longer show. But I want to say thank you to Charles and Eric and Jamie. It's been great to have Jamie on. She hasn't been on in a while. And, of course, TJ from Freakopolis Geekery for joining us as well. And we'll be back with an all-new Comic Corner for you guys next month. Same bat time, same bat channel, first Monday of next month. And please make sure you go to our Facebook page, shoot us a message that you'd like to win this comic book. I'd love to give it away to you. Just shoot us a message. You'll be all set. Thanks a lot for listening to Comic Corner, May edition of 2019, presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. Make sure you check out Trek Talking and Beyond Thursday night. We're going to be talking the Orville. We're going to be talking the Twilight Zone. We'd love to have you join us. and everybody else, be good to each other. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next Comic Corner. Good night, everybody.
Bye, Al. Prosper.
Good night, guys.
Let's see what's out there.